Welcome back to season two of Snubs and Dubs. We've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how you doing today?
Kyle, I'm doing better.
Great.
Last time on Snubs and Dubs, I said I was dodging COVID. 2 days later, I got COVID, but I have since recovered and passed the whatever period, so now I feel good again, and I'm back to Hundy P. J. Mills. But Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm glad that I've also been dodging COVID. Oh, God.
Oh, no. Why would you do that?
I shouldn't have said that shit. Damn it.
You messed up. In 2 days, you're going to wake up with a cough. You're going to go, shit. And then you're going to test positive. That's what's going to happen. Happen to me.
Or I'm just better than you. I'm just built different.
The saddest part about getting COVID is I've been making that built different joke to everyone I talk to who has had COVID before.
Yeah.
And I'm no longer built different. Now I'm built the same.
Oh, it feels bad.
It feels really bad.
Yeah. Well, did you watch anything when you were down with COVID?
No, I was still too busy. That's the most bullshit thing because I was able to work from home.
Yeah,
I couldn't even take time off. The only sick time I took off, I slept.
Nice.
So, that's good though. Yeah. Otherwise, I've been preparing for a band gig and playing a lot of bass.
Very exciting.
Yeah. How about you, Kyle? What you watched?
I actually had a bit of a detox. I didn't do any TV or movie watching the last week. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. And I was even saying last week that I wanted to catch up on some of the supplementary watching because, as people might realize, it's the last movie of the season that we're talking about. So there's some other movies that came out in 2014 I want to watch that I haven't seen that we will mention in the finale, but I didn't get to any of them.
And you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
That's just fine.
I was checking out the beta for Multiverses.
Ooh, how's that been?
Good. A friend of the show, Nick LaGore, has been covering it a little bit on his YouTube channel. He live streamed with us. There's a recording of that. I'm on it. So you can go check it out there on his YouTube channel. I'll link that. But yeah, it's a fun game so far.
Nice. How has your detox felt? Do you feel different? Have you achieved nirvana in the meantime?
I don't know. It made me really appreciate this movie, I think.
Good.
So, yeah.
This is a movie that I think deserves it.
Definitely. Okay, well, of course, season two of Snubs and Doves has been covering the films from the year 2014. And so for episode 25, we finally made it. We're here. We're talking about the 87th Academy Award Best Picture winner, Birdman.
Wow.
Had you seen it before?
I have seen it before, and I've been racking my brain trying to remember how and when.
Right.
Because I know I saw it before the award show.
Yes.
But I can't remember seeing it in the theater. So I don't know how I watched it, but I know I did.
I'm the same way. I remember seeing it before the awards because I know going in. Well, no, I'm not going to say that yet. I was going to say what I had in my head of who it was going to be between and who I was okay with it being.
Mm-hmm.
And Birdman was one that I knew that I was okay winning if it was possible. But yeah, so I had seen it. I don't remember, though.
Did we watch it together?
It's possible.
Did we watch it together?
We were watching a lot
right
of these
before the show or something?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah. We watched that one, I'm pretty sure, together. I don't know how.
It's too long.
We made it. We are the directors and writers of that movie. We made it, so that's how we saw it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it since then, though.
Me neither. Yeah. It's not one that I thought to revisit in the time between.
Yeah, neither.
But it's so good. It's so good.
Okay. All right. Well, if you're interested in Birdman, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. Reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen this movie yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
Birdman is a 2014 American bleak comedy drama film directed by Alejandro Iñárritu, also written by Alejandro Iñárritu, Nicolas Jacobone, Alexander Dinelaris Jr., and Armando Bo. This is starring Michael Keaton as Regan, Zach Galifianakis as Jake, Ed Norton as Mike, Andrea Riseborough as Laura, Amy Ryan as Sylvia, Naomi Watts as Leslie, and Emma Stone as Sam. It has a runtime of 119 minutes and released on October 17th, 2014. Kyle, what did you think of Birdman?
Holy fuck, I love this movie.
It's so good.
It's so... This movie is fucking art. Like, yeah, it's art.
This reminded me of things that I... of like, why I even give a shit about movies.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things. I really like comedies and stuff, but for such a different reason. Whereas this one has, like, such an emotional fulfillment to it, but also, like, there's just so much going on that it doesn't give you answers for it. It makes you think. Yeah. This one really sticks with you after you watch it.
Because it's got an energy. It's got a snappiness.
It's got a lot of style.
It rolls, but you appreciate the style, and you recognize how challenging the way that they shot it was. Oh,
that seems fucked. This is like Jazz the movie. This is if Jazz was a movie, it's Birdman.
Wow. We also have a movie about Jazz.
And that one's not Jazz. This one is Jazz. That one's just about Jazz.
Yeah. And like the performances across the board, amazing.
They're all stellar.
Yeah.
And everyone gives it.
You add that like extra bit of meta commentary into it where like Michael Keaton, Birdman, Batman. Yeah. So
Ed Norton.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's really fucking good.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, should we get to a plot?
Why don't you drop a plot here?
I'm going to read right through the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Birdman. Regan Thompson is a faded actor famous for playing a superhero named Birdman in a film trilogy from 1989 to 1992. He is tormented by the mocking and critical internal voice of Birdman and frequently visualizes himself performing feats of levitation and telekinesis. Regan is trying to regain recognition by writing, directing, and starring in a Broadway adaptation of Raymond Carver's short story, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love. However, the Birdman voice wants Regan to return to blockbuster cinema and insists that he is essential to Regan's identity. Jake, Regan's best friend and lawyer, is producing the play, which co-stars Regan's girlfriend, Laura. Regan's daughter, Sam, a recovering drug addict with whom he is trying to reconnect, is working as his assistant. The day before the first preview, a light fixture falls onto Regan's hapless co-star, Ralph. At Leslie's suggestion, Regan replaces Ralph with her boyfriend, the brilliant but volatile and self-absorbed method actor Mike Shiner. The first previews are disastrous. Mike breaks character over replacing his gin with water, attempts to rape Leslie during a sex scene, and claims that the prop gun does not look natural. Regan clashes continually with Mike, culminating in a brawl after Regan reads a New York Times interview with Mike in which he steals Regan's personal reason for doing a Raymond Carver play. Jake persuades Regan to continue with the play. When Regan berates Sam after finding her using marijuana, she insultingly rebukes and chastises him, telling him he is irrelevant and the play is for his own vanity. During the final preview, Regan accidentally locks himself outside with his robe stuck in the fire escape door. He is forced to walk through Times Square in his briefs and enter through the audience door to do the final scene. A concerned Sam is waiting in his dressing room after the show, and she thinks the performance was very unusual but interesting. She shows him that the Times Square footage is going viral and explains how this actually helps him. Regan goes to a bar for a drink and approaches Tabitha Dickinson, a cynical and highly influential theater critic. She promises to kill his play with a deprecating review without seeing it. On the way back, Regan buys a pint of whiskey, drinks it, and passes out on a stoop. The next day, walking to the theater with a severe hangover, Regan visualizes Birdman trying to convince him to abandon the play and make a fourth Birdman film. Regan then imagines himself flying through the streets of Manhattan before arriving at the theater. On opening night, the play is going very well. In his dressing room, a strangely calm Regan confesses to his ex-wife Sylvia that several years ago he attempted to drown himself in the ocean after she caught him having an affair. He also tells her about the Birdman voice, which she ignores. After Sylvia leaves, Regan picks up a real gun for the final scene in which his character commits suicide. At the climax, Regan shoots himself in the head on stage. The play receives a standing ovation. Regan wakes up in the hospital. The suicide attempt merely blew off his nose, which has been surgically reconstructed. Tabitha has published a glowing review of the play, calling the suicide attempt just what the American theater needed. Sam visits with flowers and takes a picture of him to share with the skyrocketing number of followers on the Twitter account she has created for him. While she steps outside to find a vase, Regan goes to the bathroom, removes the bandages, revealing his swollen new nose, and says goodbye to Birdman, seen seated on the toilet. Fascinated by the birds flying outside his room, he opens the window, peers up to them, and then climbs out onto the ledge. Sam returns to an empty room and frantically runs to the open window, scanning the ground before slowly looking up to the sky and smiling at what she sees. But that's Birdman.
Wow, Kyle, you really dropped that like it's plot.
Wow.
Okay. Right off the bat, question. Mm-hmm. Do you think he kills himself at any point?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because that's kind of the question. Yeah. It's not as obvious as like what's in the box for, yeah. What's that?
Seven?
Yes, yeah. That one. Mm-hmm. But it's still a question that doesn't have an answer. Does he kill himself?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. I think what we're seeing is him jump out the window and probably die. But like, or maybe he died earlier. Because maybe he actually drowned himself. Yeah. I saw a theory on a YouTube video. I don't take any credit for this, but I don't remember who it was, that they said that when he says that he was going to drown himself, he actually did drown himself. And that's why we see the dead jellyfish at the start and the flashes, whatever. And this is sort of like his purgatory for him to like get over his ego or something. And I don't know.
But see, I also saw that. And I'm just not a fan of any movie theory that includes everyone was already dead before it happened. Yeah. I think that's just kind of boring and lazy.
I agree. Yeah. So I like the idea that he maybe did die and like what Sam is looking up at isn't him flying, but maybe his, I don't know, the representation of him, like how he's viewed by people. People are looking up at him now more so than looking down at him.
Mm-hmm.
And reputation, maybe?
Maybe. I feel like if I had to choose a moment, because I think he does die. Yeah. I think it's he kills himself on stage. And then right. The scene in the hospital is just like everything that he wanted to happen from this, where he has a super successful play. Yeah. He's the main story about that. Even the person writing the review is like, wow, I love this guy so much.
Yeah.
And he gets fulfillment from his daughter. He's reconnected with his ex-wife. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't get remarried, but like they clearly have reestablished some kind of relationship. Yeah. And then he just kind of flies out the window after that. I feel like that's where he dies, is mm-hmm. on stage. But that's just my theory.
Yeah, that's possible. It's interesting because like throughout the movie, we get these flickers of him doing these supernatural powers or like these superhero powers where mm-hmm. he's either flying or he's doing some sort of telekinetic ability. And it's always undercut by some sort of reality showing that it's not happening.
Yeah.
Like when he's flying around and then he gets to the theater, but then the cabbie chases him in.
Yeah.
So like stuff like that. But the only moments we don't have undercut are the one at the beginning where he's floating. And then this flying at the end. So mm-hmm. that those are the only bits of fantasy or like actual power that we don't see undercut by reality. So who knows?
Yeah. It's so much is left up to you, the viewer's interpretation. And yes. That's what makes this movie great.
I love a movie that leaves something up to an interpretation, but in a way that feels good.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to be left there like asking questions that I don't want to have to ask. Mm-hmm. These are questions that I want to have to ask. Like this type of ambiguous ending is kind of reminding me of like the Inception ambiguous ending.
Yes.
Where it's like, is he in a dream? Is he in the real world? Whatever. Like that's a cool ambiguous ending. So is this. Like, mm-hmm. is he actually flying? Did he die somewhere along the way? Or is he dead here? Or has he actually been able to do all these abilities the whole time? It's so cool.
It is so cool. I also love that in the same way that Chef was about Jon Favreau being mad, this is about dunking on Michael Keaton pretty much.
Yeah.
And also really laid the groundwork for people being tired of Marvel films so much later. This is really ahead of its time in people kind of getting over that and like how actors feel about those roles once they're finished in them.
Yeah, well, because like he didn't do a Birdman 4 because he felt like people were looking down on him for yeah. doing that. But then like obviously they were making a lot of money, and I mean it's funny now that Michael Keaton is literally doing more superhero stuff
now that he's
like,
back in it
after this movie came out. 3 years later he was in Spider-Man Homecoming as Vulture, only to then, you know, just this year reprise that role in Morbius.
Oh god.
But then he's coming back as Batman in the Flash movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, so good for him.
So it's funny that he has this whole art piece, essentially, about him trying to break away from superhero genre films and do something real, something high art. And then he's still going back to it anyways. Yeah. But that's also a conflict that the character has. Like, does he go back to that? Because people love that. That's what people like him for. And it's, you see that that has some value too in the movie, because there are moments where Edward Norton's character at the bar, he's like telling him, like, you know, oh, like, I'm bearing my soul. People are going to remember this. They're going to forget you. But then people don't know him at the bar except for the theater critic.
Yeah.
People don't want his picture. They want Regan Thompson's picture. Like, stuff like that.
It's an interesting. Another similarity between this and Chef is screaming at critics.
Yes.
And this was a really fun screaming at critic.
Yeah.
Because it was less comedy oriented and more just actually telling critics to go suck wine.
Yeah, go shove it. Yeah. Because like she's so ready to shit on him.
She hasn't even watched it yet.
Because of what he is, like what he represents to her. And yeah, it's sad. And I do think that actually a lot of critics can be like that.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They go in ready to hate on something. No open mind, no anything. And that's why I think sometimes people anticipate a film is going to be bad before going in. And then it ends up being bad to them because they had that expectation. But
yeah. And sometimes it blows you away, and not because they killed themselves on stage. Yeah. What I really wanted was Michael Keaton to come back in after he'd done screaming it the first time and just go, it's molten.
And like what I love about this movie is just like how much care is clearly put into every scene, because like the way that they had to do this one shot esque type thing clearly took a lot of practice and staging and planning out. And the fact that all the actors are so on, like every time, even like Zach Galifianakis is great in this. Like it's not like that comedic of a role, but he's like perfect in it. And Michael Keaton's fucking amazing.
He just rips the whole movie long.
Edward Norton as this just asshole is so good.
It is.
And they just like the way that it flows, it just, the pacing is beautiful. There's only one bit where they're looking down a hallway for an extended period of time. And like, I was kind of wondering why it was taking so long to move away from that hallway, but then you're listening and you're hearing what else is going on, and it uses audio in a great way too.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. And there's a lot of underwear in this movie. So much tidy whitey going on. Got to admit.
Yeah. And just Edward Norton's exposed ass.
Yeah. You see a lot of Edward Norton's soul and body in this.
Yes. Yeah, and there's interesting characters. They're all interesting.
They all are.
Every single one of them has like something going on. They all have some sort of like duality to them. Like Sam is interesting because she's putting on this front, but I don't know if that necessarily is who she is, and Edward Norton can kind of see through that. And then because he's also that, where he's performing in his real life, but on stage that's where he feels authentic. That's where he can actually have a real experience or get a real erection. Like that's where he can do things. And then with Regan, he's like living for people's approval, but then within himself, like he's like such a mess. Like it's so, they're just great. I don't know.
It's amazing. Thing I like about when Emma and Mike start dating, or Sam and Mike. Is that Regan never has a moment of like pulling her aside and being like, this guy's a jerk, you can't date him.
Yeah.
He's just disappointed and like upset, but he doesn't like actually take that out and have a scene where he gets mad at her for dating him.
Yeah.
And I think that's a cool way to do that, because like it's an overdone thing to have that, like, I forbid you from seeing him.
Yeah.
And then they keep dating, and then either the dad has a realization that the guy is okay, or the daughter realizes he's a dick. But this is just like, he sees them dating, he's mad about it, but realizes everyone in here is an adult and doesn't push it.
Yeah. What a great fucking movie.
I know. It's just so unique. Like, obviously it stands out for how the shot's done, because it feels like, and is meant to feel like, one really long take.
Yeah.
That really helps the pacing. And I never realized how much cuts really interrupt your watching. Mm-hmm. It just makes you, it takes you out of it a bit, but when you see it all together, you can't afford to look away.
Yeah.
You don't want to, because it's still like rolling from the first scene of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
It is incredible.
Critics and audience think?
Yeah, let's get into critics and audiences. Kyle, take a stab at what you think the critics and audiences are feeling about Birdman.
Ooh. I'm thinking critics is going to be high 90s. I think it's going to be a 96 maybe. Audiences, I mean, it's a good movie. I think that'll be like 90. Let's say 90.
I was surprised by the numbers, and I think you will be too.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes, critics, 91.
Okay.
Audiences, 78. IMDb, 7.7.
Okay.
And Metacritic, 87.
Yeah.
I think Metacritic is like the only score that it might actually deserve. Everything else feels way too low.
Yeah. Weird.
It is bizarre.
Huh.
This is a movie where you can pretend this is your favorite to get a lot of rep. Like, you will look like you know everything about movies if you're like, oh, Birdman?
Yeah.
Bracket the something.
Or the unexpected.
Or the unexpected virtues of ignorance is my favorite movie. I went to film school.
Yes, I love Alejandro G. Iñárritu.
Where this did marginally better is the box office.
Oh, good.
It made $103 million on a budget of $18 million.
That's actually pretty reasonable budget.
Good return. And that's a small budget considering the star power you have going on here. And I'll tell you a little sneak peek of why. This did not take long to make.
That kind of makes sense.
That could do it. This finished number 74 at that darn box office.
Hmm.
But now it's time for our final rankings of season two.
We'll save that movie for finale.
I mean, not rankings, score.
Yeah.
Final score of a movie.
Yeah.
For season two. Kyle, we're going to start this off with your enjoyment of this film. What are you feeling?
It's a 5.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's going to be on 5 for Jason as well for the enjoyment. Mm-hmm. How about the craft, Kyle?
Oh my God. 5.
The limitations of a 1 to 5 score is that you can't put this one at like a 27,
yeah,
despite the rest being at a 5. But I will follow tradition. I'm giving this a 5 for craft.
It's a hard 5. Like, if there was a capital 5, it would be a capital 5.
This is bold number 5.
Yeah.
And then in brackets, like, are you kidding me? Close bracket kind of 5.
Yeah.
Execution.
It's a 5.
There's no misses.
No.
It can't miss.
No. The writing is so snappy and the acting is perfection.
It is absolute. This is a 5 bold underline bracket. Are you kidding me? Kyle, what is your rewatchability?
Oh boy. It's a 5.
Well, of course it is. I also, even though I've never actually rewatched this from the first time I saw it till now, anytime I can sit down and throw this bad boy on.
Definitely.
Kyle, I'm right there with you. I'm giving this a 5. We have a repeat. 40 out of 40.
Damn.
After narrowly skipping it on Whiplash, almost out of spite. But we did it. The real second 40 out of 40 of the year is here. And that's going to bring us to a tough question, the ranking question.
Well, we're going to save that question for next episode.
Oh my God.
Next episode, we're also going to give the opportunity to give a little adjustment to the rankings. But you guys are going to have to stay tuned because the finale is going to be where all those answers are held.
Wow. How low can you put the theory of everything? All that and more will be answered. Yeah. All right. Well, that is going to bring us right next to some Letterboxd reviews. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Now, I will say the last several movies that I've had to do Letterboxd reviews for have made me doubt what the community has to offer. This brought me back.
Oh, great.
This gave me a renewed faith in, I didn't even need to go that far to get like a several quality ones. So good work out there. This has a 3.9 out of 5 on Letterboxd, which is basically as high as you can go. We'll start this off with Shannon, 5 stars. I love Edward Norton's character, Edward Norton.
Yep, that's great.
Vitamin C1, 4 stars. I think Edward Norton was just trying to show us how working with Jared Leto looks like.
Oh, man.
And also intersperse this with like everyone raving about seeing his ass. Just every time I see a review, add 6. Wow, that was Edward Norton's ass in there. Sierra, 4 stars. If only someone had pitched this to me as Black Swan, but for men, I would have watched it years ago.
Well, that's weird because Whiplash is more like Black Swan
than
this one is.
I've never seen Black Swan.
I was just
hoping that was a real singer.
No.
But I mean, it's close enough. Yeah.
Black Swan is essentially but a dancer who goes to extreme lengths to put on a performance of the Black Swan.
That's fair. But if you go by name, Birdman's a lot closer to Black Swan than Whiplash is. So I'm going to give it to Sierra here.
Okay.
And finally, Leon, 0.5 stars. I thought this was a fucking superhero movie, and now I'm explaining themes of impotence and death to my nephew.
Oh my god. That's great. I think it definitely needed that, or the unexpected virtue of ignorance kind of dissuade the people that might have thought that this was just a Michael Keaton bird movie.
It would have been great if the only promotional material they used too were the scenes of Birdman, of like him flying, and that one time they're like riffing on if he were to do Birdman again, everything starts blowing up. If they completely missed the mark on marketing just for some shit. Teach people about art instead.
Amazing.
All right. Awards time.
Oh, yes.
This has many.
Yes.
This was nominated for 9 Academy Awards.
Oh, boy.
Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for Michael Keaton, Best Supporting Actor for Edward Norton, Best Supporting Actress for Emma Stone, Best Original Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Sound Editing, Best Sound Mixing. It won 4 of those.
Oh, pretty good.
Other than Best Picture, Kyle, do you think you know what they were?
Editing.
Ooh. No.
Cinematography?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. Writing?
No.
Oh, fuck.
Best original screenplay, if that's what you meant.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
One more.
Sound mixing?
No.
Okay, give me it.
Best director.
Okay, I should have said that. That's a no-brainer for sure.
Yeah, I feel like this is really down to him and what's his face from Grand Budapest?
Oh, Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson, yeah that's going to be a two-horse kind of race there. Mm-hmm. Other notable awards. This won the BAFTA for cinematography, Golden Globes for best actor, and best screenplay. This was best picture at the Satellite Awards. And in total was given 484 award nominations, winning 193 of them.
Oh my God, wow.
Now you might be thinking, this wasn't nominated for Best Score.
Yeah,
and that makes sense. I'll be touching on that. But there was not just your average this didn't get nominated. There was controversy behind that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I can understand why it wouldn't be nominated, because it is just a drum solo. Like, that's all there really is.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Part of the reason why it wasn't nominated was because there was too much other stuff in the score.
Oh.
So, that's the last fun fact, because it's pretty long.
All right.
But would you like to hear the fun facts on the way there?
Oh, yeah. Let's take me on that journey.
Okay. Because the movie was carefully rehearsed and shot in sequence, editing only took 2 weeks.
Damn, that's quick.
You pretty much just need tie it together and then do the sound shit and you're kind of done.
Yeah, you kind of just have to blend where they made those transitionary cuts.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of good.
And Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were only 16 visible cuts in the entire film. Pretty crazy. Given the unusual style of filming long takes, Edward Norton and Michael Keaton kept a running tally of flubs made by the actors and actresses. Emma Stone made the most mistakes, and Zach Galifianakis made the fewest.
Wow.
Galifianakis actually did mess up a few lines during the filming, but played them off well enough that they're just included in the film.
Good.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Quicker on his feet than Emma Stone was.
I feel like that's comedy chops. I feel like comedy, improv, like that sort of actor can play really well on their feet in these sort of situations.
Yeah. I imagine even if he starts saying the wrong thing or pops into it, like he'll recover anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of short times, this was shot entirely in 2 months, including all rehearsals.
Oh, even rehearsals?
Wow. Even rehearsals. That's why they could make this movie on $18 million.
Yeah. I feel like the actors probably had to have the script memorized before they went into rehearsals. So.
The scene of Reagan running through Times Square in his underwear was filmed after midnight so that the amount of real bystanders caught on camera in the shot would be limited, and that the majority of the people in frame are hired extras or crew members. But he was actually outside in his undies, so if you had perfect timing, you could see the outline of Michael Keaton junk.
Amazing.
Yeah. Similar to how Michael Keaton's Birdman reflects on his earlier role as Batman, including stated dates for the Birdman films, Edward Norton's character is a parody of Norton's own reputation for being very abrasive and difficult to work with. In fact, Alejandro G. Iñárritu said of the scene where Regan and Mike are rehearsing the script for the first time that Edward Norton was looking over the script and commenting about it. Alejandro then reminded him he was doing the same thing his character is doing in the film to make fun of him.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's hilarious.
I know. That's so
that's great casting too, though. Oh my God.
Okay, now it's time for the long one.
All right.
Antonio Sanchez's celebrated musical score, performed almost entirely by drums, was disqualified by the music branch of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences because it didn't fit their criteria. Sanchez had received a note from the award committee explaining the decision, quoting Rule 15 of the 87th Academy Award Rules, and writing that they felt, in quotes, the fact that the film also contains over half an hour of non-original music cues that are featured very prominently in numerous pivotal moments in the film made it difficult for the committee to accept your submission, end quote. After Sanchez and Alejandro Iñárritu had appealed the AMPAS's decision, a special meeting of the music committee was held, and although its members had great respect for the score and considered it superb, they thought that the classical music was also used as scoring and had equally contributed to the effectiveness of the film, and that the musical identity of the film was created by both the drums and the classical music. Academy's decision was not overturned. Nevertheless, the score is recognized at every other major precursor award. Sanchez was awarded the Grammy and the Critics' Choice Award for Best Film Score, and was also nominated at the Golden Derby Awards, the Golden Globes, and the BAFTAs.
Wow. Well, at least they got some recognition.
Yeah.
Because, like, that film, its energy, a lot of it derives from the score and, like, the drums and the movement. Like, that, they would lose a little bit. Actually, they would lose a lot of energy if not for score. So it does a lot to elevate that movie. And it did a great job.
I love the jazzy drums in the background. Like, all I really remembered going into this film was I remember there being really long shots and just random ass drums. But I never forgot how well they work together.
Yes. Oh, is that it? Jeez.
Yeah.
We've kind of had a bit of a shorter episode because I don't think we've had anything bad to say about it.
It's just such a good movie.
It's really
Some
good.
Are calling it the best.
It's one of those where I forget about sometimes just how much I love it. Like, I remembered how much I loved Whiplash, and I think it's because it, like, related to me more at that moment than this movie did.
Yeah.
But this movie is just such a step above so many other movies.
Yeah.
And you can just tell, like, on the screen, you can see everything, the craft, the acting, everything that's put into it. It's so phenomenal to watch.
I know. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And maybe this would speak to you more if when you first watched it, you were a middle-aged man who had just played Batman unsuccessfully. It might have had a bit more of emotional resonance than a kid going into university playing music. Like, you were.
Yeah. But, man, I don't know.
Well, what would your parting shot of Birdman be?
I don't know. Watch it. I don't really know. I feel like this maybe can fly under people's radar sometimes too. I mean, it is a Best Picture winner, so I feel like people will have seen it afterwards. But I don't know. It's just one of those that kind of fades out of conversation, I think, sometimes. It's not one I hear about a lot, but it's really good. It deserves to be seen more.
Yeah, I agree. It is a very, very good, interesting film. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth watching just to see how this thing was put together and imagining how goddamn hard that must have been and how much dialogue you need to memorize for, like, each scene.
Yeah.
It's probably pages and pages and pages.
Oh my God.
And all the cues. I guess one small fun fact I forgot to put in was, like, of the tally of actor mistakes, Emma Stone was at like 20.
Oh, wow.
And she was like the most. So it was still pretty well done. But imagining, like, especially if you're deep into a scene and then you flub it and you got to restart that whole thing.
Oof.
Oh, baby. That would suck.
Did you said how many hard cuts there were. Did you see how many hidden cuts there were?
No, I didn't see anything for that. But it just stated you can notice 16.
Yeah, because I could note, like, they don't really shy away from the places where there would be a hidden cut because they'll be just like a absurd movement. Like, Edward Norton and Emma Stone are on the top and they're making out, but then the camera moves and Edward Norton's on stage.
Yeah.
So clearly there was a cut there somewhere, or when they turn the camera and then there's smoke and they're down the hall and suddenly the stage is there. Like, that's not actually where the location of the stage is. So there had to have been cut somewhere around there. but like for the most part, they're really well hidden. Like
they are really well hidden.
I'm sure there was more cuts than I think I noticed.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the one where he's in the hospital when he was just on stage seconds ago.
Yeah.
That was also a pretty big cut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's not many though.
No. All right. Well, we're going to be talking about it a little bit next episode some more. So
it's just really the teaser for the big one next week.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys all for listening to season 2, episode 25 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pods, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We love to hear guys' thoughts on this film or on this episode, so please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for the season 2 finale. Before that, though, this Friday, look out for the last bonus episode of season 2 covering one of the worst films of 2014. You're definitely not going to want to miss that. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.